F1A. Number 11B.
He goes on and says, how are the things of Esau searched out? How are his hidden things sought up? And you see, he wants to say, look here, the grape gatherers, when they gather, they leave always something behind. And usually then afterwards comes the after a harvest, and usually that's the best wine afterwards. That's a side note. But here in Esau, he says, when the heathen will come into Edom, they will find everything. They will search out every corner. They will not be like the grape gatherers, that they leave over just a little bit. Nothing will be left over. It's a radical searching out and a radical robbery of all what Esau has. So it's a wonderful sense that if we see that when the Christ comes to us as Obadiah, as a servant of the Lord, and comes to us as the representative of the Lord, he will really search out everything that is wrong within us and take it away. He will not leave a single thing over that is not God-like, that is not of true substance. He will take away all that is of wrong substance. Then I read on and just listen if he gives me another sense of how the Christ will take away all false sense of substance or not. And so I read on and see, all the men of thy confederacy have brought thee even to the border. The men that were at peace with thee have deceived thee. And I hear at once, this is another subject. It's no more showing how spirit will rob us of all false substance. Suddenly there is a subject of deceiving. The moment I have that subject of deceiving, I know that soul. Because soul deals with malicious animal magnetism, soul deals with sin, soul deals with the hidden mental agencies. And so I see here something else comes in. What comes in? He says, those who have been at peace with Edom, those with whom Edom perhaps had a peace treaty or a treaty of assistance in case of war, that they didn't keep that treaty, that they didn't keep that covenant, that they have deceived thee, that they were treacherous and traitors. So, with whom they were at peace with thee have deceived thee and prevailed against thee. They were playing really a dirty trick on them. They that eat thy bread have laid a wound under thee. You see again, treacherous, being a traitor. Those to whom Edom has been helpful, has given bread, have sustained them, and so on, they turned against Edom and laid a wound under their seat, under thee. There is none understanding in him. There is no spiritual understanding in Edom. He was the very counterfeit of spiritual understanding. That whole sense of betraying, of deceiving, that sinful sense as a counterfeit of spiritual understanding. I go on and listen if he says something similar. Shall I not in that day, says the Lord, even destroy the wise men out of Edom. And I see it's a repetition of there is no understanding in Edom. There is no spiritual understanding there. Therefore, the wise men out of Edom, the wise men were naturally not to be interpreted in a positive sense as the wise men, but were those magicians and astrologers and so on that we have seen that were advising Edom and the king of Edom. So they were the false concept of wisdom. Even destroy the wise men out of Edom and understanding out of the mount of Esau. Again, understanding. Can you see something that one has to know when one reads the Bible? The Bible uses a term like wise men or like understanding here, always either positively or negatively. A term is not always positive. And you see that very clearly also in the glossary, where Mrs. Eddy explains biblical terms and in most cases gives a positive and a negative interpretation. So those people were used to that. They were used, you see, they began to see that a term had always meaning within the context. So when he was speaking about Esau, who was a representative of the false man, then whatever he said about that Edom must have a false connotation, a negative connotation. So the wise men were all the astrologer, magician, and those people, and there was no the understanding of them were naturally the understanding of necromancy and occultism and things like that. So reading the Bible, you can't say here is understanding, and understanding, we know, is a positive idea of spirit. And so the Lord wants to wipe out the understanding. That would not make sense. The Lord wipes out the false understanding in Edom. But do you see that you have to be very careful to read terms in context, in the Bible especially. The textbook doesn't do that. In the textbook you can, I guess, nearly 99.9% always rely that the term means what it means. Understanding means understanding, and it's positive, and it's the understanding of God. It does never mean the understanding of necromancy and occultism and mysticism, etc. Not so in the Bible. That's something that is unique to the Hebrew language, that they were always using one term either negatively or positively, but you knew which one because of the context. Verse 9, "And thy mighty men, O Teman, shall be dismayed to the end that every one of the mount of Esau may be cut off by slaughter." And so you have again the wise men and the mighty men. See, usually a kingdom consisted of having a court, and in the court there were the wise men, those who gave counsel to the king, and they were the strong men, the mighty men, those who had to protect the court, who had to protect the king, the guards, and so on. And they constituted the power of a king and of a kingdom. So here he shows from verse 7 on constantly that Edom and the king of Edom was surrounded by traitors, by false counselors, by false might, and so that would be wiped away. And you have a good sense of the counterfeit of soul, that animal, malicious animal magnetism, and vice and treachery, and so on. We go on and think, does he have some more to say about that counterfeit of Saul, or what is it? And so we come to verse 10. For thy violence against thy brother Jacob, shame shall cover thee, and thou shalt be cut off forever. And I begin to see now he's talking about something else. He's no more talking about Edom itself and the setup of Edom itself and the false, sinful atmosphere of Edom itself. Now he begins to show something about the relationship between Edom or Esau and his true brother Jacob. So that the relationship enters in, which we know is a completely different metaphysical idea. It's an idea of principle that relationships are being shown. So he refers to the violence of Edom against his brother Jacob. And now he begins to show what constitutes that violence, why he had was defined to have violence against his brother Jacob. Namely, in the day that thou stoodest on the other side, in the day that the stranger carried away captive his forces and foreigners entered into his gates and cast lots upon Jerusalem, even thou wast as one of them. Now, I read it again and show first how it is difficult to read a prophet, because the prophets, when they deliver their prophecy, they never tell us that they change the standpoint. They change the standpoint of what they are talking about. They never do that. So that one is always at first ignorant about whom the prophecy is expressed. Is it now Edom or is it Jacob? You see, he started out with 10, where it says, for thy violence. Who is thy? Edom. Huh? And you think, all right, he's talking about Edom's violence against thy brother Jacob. Then in 11, he says, in the day that thou stoodest on the other side. And on which side? On what other side? Huh? On the other side of Jacob. Edom stood, that's his reproach, Edom stood on the other side than Jacob. That is not expressed clearly, but as you read on, you feel it that it was that way, because he tells now suddenly, in the day that the stranger carried away captive his forces. Who is his? Not Edom, Jacob's forces. Huh? That his is Jacob, Judah. Judah was the next country bordering to Edom. So he says, you, Edom, stood on the other side of Jacob. When the enemy came into land of Jacob, then thou stoodest on the other side. You didn't stay with Jacob, with your brother Jacob. You made them... You helped those who came into Judah. You helped the enemy of Judah. And when the enemy of Judah entered Jerusalem and did take away captives from Judah, you, Edom, helped them. Is that clear? And I express it. Just by reading the text at the first go, one can't see that very clearly. So, let me read it again. In the day that thou stoodest on the other side, in the day that the strangers of Judah, carried away captive his forces, Jacob's forces, and foreigners entered into his gates, when foreigners entered in the gates of Judah, not Edom, and cast lots upon Jerusalem. Here you see, suddenly it has to do with Judah, because Jerusalem was the capital of Judah. Even thou wast one of them. You too entered in and spoiled Judah. And you even went in into Judah. You, Edom, went into Judah and helped really the enemies of Judah to carry away your brothers. That's a great reproach. But thou shouldest not have looked on the day of thy brother in the day that he became a stranger. See, he tells them when they entered and brought Judah into Babylonian captivity and took the brothers away from Judah, you should not have helped them. You should not have in the day of thy brother. Neither shouldst thou have rejoiced over the children of Judah in the day of their destruction. You can just see how Esau was just enjoying to see how Jacob was brought into captivity. That was the revenge that Esau felt right from the first day when they were born. Neither shouldst thou have spoken proudly in the day of distress. One can just see how they laughed and were proud that now finally Jacob was brought on his knees and was made captive. You can just see that. So that is what the Lord has against Edom, that his relationship with his brother was wrong. Thou shouldest not have entered. Thou is again Edom. Thou shouldest not have entered into the gate of my people. What is my people? Naturally Judah, Jacob. In the day of their calamity. Yea, thou shouldest not have looked on their affliction in the day of their calamity. Nor have laid hands on their substance in the day of their calamity. Actually, Edom went in with all the other heathen nation into Judah and robbed what they could rob in Judah, and so they laid hands on their riches. Neither shouldst thou have stood in the crossway to cut off those of his that did escape. You see, they did a dirty trick. Those Jews that could escape so as not to be brought into Babylonian captivity, Edom would catch them on the crossway. The moment they escaped over the border into Edom, they caught them and delivered them to the enemies. Neither shouldst thou have delivered up those of his that did remain in the day of distress. Some of them could naturally hide them, and Edom would find them out and deliver them to the enemies. They really did deal treacherously. For the day of the Lord is near upon all the heathen. Now he pronounces that the day is near for the heathen. As thou hast done, it shall be done unto thee. Thy reward shall return upon thine own head. That's the end of it, of this whole subject, where he said, well, what thou hast done will return on to thine own head. It gives the sense of principle, that the law of principle works, that if a false relationship has been demonstrated, it will be fall back on oneself. Then we come to a different subject, just a small one. For as ye have drunk upon my holy mountain. Now you see, at once there is another subject. It's no more the relationship between Esau and Jacob. Now it's a reproach on Edom again, namely that they have drunk upon my holy mountain. They desecrated the holy mountain. By being drunk, they had their feasts up on the holy mountain. So shall all the heathen drink continually. Yea, they shall drink and they shall swallow down, and they shall be as though they had not been. It gives that sense of the fifth statement of the commandments. Thou shalt not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain. It's that vanity of getting drunk on holy things, that they were, instead of having the inspiration, the holy inspiration, they did the very opposite. They had an ecstasy, they get drunk on the holy mountain. And so they shall be as though they had not been. Sense of life, they shall be wiped away, as if they had never existed. So it gives a sense of that vanity, of that ecstasy, emotionalism, in contrast to the inspiration that you get on the holy mountain. Then we go on and see a completely different picture, and you see at once that the subject changes. But upon Mount Zion shall be deliverance. Now comes for the first time deliverance. Now the Christ is at work. You have the saving Christ coming in. There shall be deliverance. Now for the first time that tone comes in. And there shall be holiness, and the house of Jacob shall possess their possessions. Again, you have to read into it. It says the house of Jacob shall possess their. What is their? Edom's. Edom. See, they change the subject from one, within one sentence, they change the standpoint. You know, it's something similar to what Mrs. Eddy does in her textbooks, that she can change the level of science from one, within one sentence. That she can begin with, say, with the level of divine science and go on after a comma and bring it down to the level of absolute Christian science or of Christian science. In one sentence she can do that. And that's naturally what we have to see, that we have to be able to think dimensionally. So here too, we have to interpret it rightly and see that the deliverance naturally will be when Jacob will possess Edom. And the house of, and you will see as we go on, that rendering of possessing their possession comes time and time again. So that when a subject is repeated, then we know that the quantity becomes the quality of that text. That by stressing something again and again, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 times, it hammers in what? That very point is the subject, that very point is what is the quality, the meaning of a text. Just watch here how that is repeated. In verse 17 we had it for the first time, Jacob shall possess their possessions. And the house of Jacob shall be a fire, and the house of Joseph a flame, and the house of Esau, the other one, shall be like stubble, and they shall kindle in them and devour them. Isn't it a beautiful symbolism? He compares now the southern and the northern kingdom, namely the kingdom of Jacob, that was the southern kingdom, and the kingdom of Joseph was the Israel, the northern kingdom, that they both are like a flame, and Esau is like stubble. And we know what happens when the fire is put to the stubble. Burns it up completely. So the Jacob and Joseph shall burn up Esau. And there shall not be any remaining of the house of Esau. Can you see now the deliverance is coming? Now Jacob gains the victory over Esau, and Esau will be wiped out. For the Lord has spoken it. And they of the south shall, that's Judah, they of the south shall possess, now you get the possessing, possess the mount of Esau. And they of the plain, the Philistines, they of the plain were the northern kingdom, they shall possess the Philistine, and they shall possess the fields of Ephraim and the fields of Samaria. And Benjamin, that's also the northern kingdom, shall possess Gilead. So he shows that all those enemies that entered into Judah, the Philistines and so on, that they all will now afterwards be possessed by the southern and the northern kingdom, by Jacob and by Israel. Where have I been? 19. And they of the south shall possess the mount of Esau, and they of the plain the Philistines. Oh, yes. Sorry, I read that before. 20. And the captivity of this host of the children of Israel shall possess that of the Canaanites, even unto Zarephath. And the captivity of Jerusalem, which is in Zarephath, shall possess the cities of the south. So he prophesies already into the future when Israel and Jacob is coming back and Judah is coming back from captivity, and that they then will possess those country who have come into Judah and Jerusalem. They will possess the Philistines, the Canaanites, and so on, and so on. So the whole thing turns. This is the truth section where man has dominion, where the Christ truth comes and brings deliverance. Started out and shall be deliverance. And through that deliverance, Jacob will possess Esau again, and Esau shall be no more.